It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And we talk about food on this show, and so many people never really make the connection between food and everything else that goes on in our daily lives. Food affects so many different things, not only our personal health. Certainly it has a great impact on our personal health, whether we're filling our bodies with essential nutrients and foods that are going to boost our immune system versus foods that are going to make us weak and sick, etc. But also, food affects the environment we live in, the air, the water, the soil, and certainly the other animal species that we share this planet with. And one of the things that I discovered when I became so focus on food is that it made me more mindful about so many other things that go on in this world. It's all about paying attention because there are so many things that we take for granted. And we have two great guests on this show today about very different topics, but I think it comes down to the same theme about being mindful about everything around us. Okay. So, to start with, we're going to talk to Kelly Rudnicki, who has a new cookbook out, Vegan Baking Classics, Delicious, Easy to Make Traditional Favorites. And we're going to talk about some really great, delicious treats, but first we're going to get to the more serious portion of, I think, how this all came about. And Kelly is the creator of the blog FoodAllergyMama.com. She's the mother of five small children. She lives in suburban Chicago and spends much of her time promoting food allergy awareness. She has worked as a television news producer and in corporate public relations. Vegan Baking Classics is her second book, and it's a straightforward guide to everyone's favorite baked treats, delicious, easy to make, and totally reliable vegan versions. This is classic comfort food, but prepared using all vegan ingredients that are accessible to every home cook. And they're carefully tested recipes. They come out right every time and are sure to please vegans and non-vegans alike. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really in awe. I've been at your website, foodallergymama.com, reading some of your blogs and going through some of the challenges that you've been faced. And you're doing such incredible work. And you know, I'm always, maybe it's balance or out of balance, I don't know what it is, but there are some people that amaze me with the amount of good that they do and the work that they do, and then somehow it's always balanced with some of the people that are not quite doing those things.
Thank you.
But we might get into a little bit about that in a minute. Okay, so let's just, you know, I'm not a parent, but I know that whenever parents start out having children, the thing people say is they want to make sure they have 10 fingers, 10 toes, everything's healthy, and sometimes things don't work out as we expect them to.
Right, exactly.
And for
you... Well, for my personal situation, you know, my food allergic son, he's going to be turning 9 in about a month. He was my second child. So, you know, with my first, I went through that whole process of feeding her everything. She could tolerate everything.
Mm-hmm.
Really had no worries whatsoever. So it was completely out of left field when my oldest son was diagnosed with life-threatening food allergies. And it all actually happened. Again, you bring up the topic of being mindful. I recall just not really being mindful of really what I gave him. I gave him what everybody told me to
mm-hmm.
give him, what the other
sure.
moms said, oh, try this snack and try that snack as they're trying out finger foods. So the thing that I gave him was, it was called a Gerber veggie wheel, thinking, oh, it's made with veggies. It's healthy, of course. And it's coated with cheese powder. And, you know, I didn't make the connection, but almost immediately, he was like 7 or 8 months old, almost immediately after he ete that wheel, his face broke out in hives. He was extremely sick, started vomiting. I immediately called my pediatrician. We had just moved to a new house, and said, I don't know what this is. My son seems to be reacting, but I have no idea what's going on. And, you know, the advice they gave to me was give him some Benadryl and, you know, see how he does.
Right.
And, you know, for me, like, that probably, I mean, in retrospect, that wasn't the best advice. I really should have called 911 because, really, when you have a food allergic reaction in a child, you know, when they're that young, they can't tell you if their throat is closing up or if they're experiencing
right.
more of the severe symptoms. So, really, you know, that just kind of shows you how even almost 10 years ago, there was far less information then than there even is now.
So and the recommendation is get to the emergency room.
I call 911.
Yeah.
Not even get there. You know, pick up the phone, call 911.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a diagnosed food allergy, you should always have an EpiPen on you to kind of counteract that reaction.
Right.
So that would be your first course of action, and then pick up that phone and call 911. Don't get in the car. And that is really, you know, the one thing I always try to tell parents whose children are newly diagnosed, you won't hurt your child if you give them an EpiPen. If you're kind of on the fence, do I give, you know, antihistamine, do I give the pen, you know, if they are having problems with breathing and,
mm-hmm.
and you're struggling, you give that pen, you call 911. It won't hurt them. And
right.
that's always the number one question that I get.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been this journey of, you know, from that diagnosis and not even really knowing what a food allergy was. And I love food, and I, you know, I loved all those foods.
Now, did he have some of these foods before he demonstrated a reaction, or was it the first time he had those foods?
Yes, and, you know, it's funny you bring that up because when he was an infant, I remember he was maybe a week or 2 weeks old. I tried breastfeeding, and it didn't really work for me, so I was trying to supplement with formula. He had some feeding issues, and he got violently ill when I gave him cow's milk formula.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't tell you that cow's milk is in formula.
Right.
But he got so severely ill that I went through a whole variety of different soy formulas and then finally landed on that really expensive one that, you know, hypoallergenic.
They put casein in a lot of formulas, which is from cow's milk.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There are these mystery words that people aren't sure what they are.
Well, that was the one thing that was hardest for me when he was first diagnosed is that I was given this list of ingredients to avoid. So at that time, he was allergic to eggs and dairy and peanuts, tree nuts, legumes, beans. And so I had this list of hidden names
mm-hmm.
that, you know, were kind of code words for different ingredients. And really, at that time, there was not that food labeling law. It was not in effect. That didn't go into effect until 2006. So you literally had to look at the back of the package and decipher every single ingredient to make sure that it was safe, which quickly led me to just stop eating all that food.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it's processed, as we know now. I mean, the longer the list, the worse it is, you know. And
Jack LaLanne.
We really don't.
Jack LaLanne, one of my favorite expressions, if man made it, don't eat it.
Absolutely. You know, my God, I can't even read it. You know, it's absolutely daunting. So, you know, I quickly changed my habits almost overnight where I'd show up at Whole Foods with my list and I realized I have to cook from scratch and I have to make things from scratch. But that has been a blessing for our family. As you mentioned, I have 5 children now, and it has been a true blessing to learn to cook. And, you know, whether it's baked goods or dinner or breakfast, you know, just so simply and so, you know, in a healthful manner. And it's really taught my children that it's not complicated. It's not a big deal. We don't ever eat anything out of a box, and they don't miss it. They don't want it. You know, even my kids without food allergies always prefer the, you know, the vegan versions and the, you know, allergen-free versions that I make.
Mm,
if they go out to a restaurant, they can taste that heaviness and that difference.
I'm sorry you had to go through this, and I'm sure you're always on alert because you never want your son to consume the things he's not supposed to. But on the other hand, it got you into the kitchen, and I don't know what it's going to take to get Americans back into the kitchen. It's so important to make the majority of our food from whole, fresh foods.
I mean, absolutely. And it's funny, I go and sometimes speak to my children's classrooms and kind of, you know, talk about, you know, different vegetables. I was recently at a Chicago public school event. It was through Michelle Obama's Goal for the Gold campaign, and it's all surrounded around teaching children, you know, healthier options and vegetables and fruits. So I brought in this whole array of different vegetables. These kids were fabulous. They had never tasted a jicama was one that I brought in, and they never had tasted it. They were eating it raw like it was candy.
Yeah.
They loved it. And I always try to tell parents, you know, you're overthinking this. You know, you're overthinking, you know, that cooking has to be a big production.
Right.
You know, it's just not. And, you know, my
I know some kids that were brought up on fruits and thought that blueberries were the most amazing treat.
Exactly. You know, go to a farmer's market, the kids love eating just directly out of those little containers of the sweetest, freshest, you know, food. And you teach them that now. That's probably the greatest gift you can give your children, is teaching them how to care and honor their bodies and, you know, just really love not just their environment but their bodies and be mindful of what they put into it and always think about it. And that starts at an early age for sure.
Do you think we're experiencing more food allergies than before, or is it something that's always gone on? Do you have any feeling about that?
Yeah, we absolutely are. You know, there was this new study that just came out about a month ago that more children are getting diagnosed more than ever with food allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, there's, you know, a couple of theories, and most doctors and physicians will tell you that it's all based around this hygiene hypothesis, which basically means that we have essentially changed the way our bodies react to basic things because of our overuse of hand sanitizers and cleaning products and chemicals and preservatives. And there are some scientific evidence backing that. And I do think that we, you know, I don't know how old you are, but, you know, I'm 36, and when I was growing up, there were very few of these types of packaged snacks. We didn't have Lunchables. We didn't have all these crazy things, you know, squeezable yogurts, all those crazy things that our kids had to make things fast and easy for the parents to give their kids. I think that
fast
really,
and easy concept, too, is kind of distorted, but yes.
It is distorted, and, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I do think, obviously, you know, there's also been studies that a lot of children in third world countries have virtually no food allergies.
And
so there is this connection, I think, between how we're preparing our food, how we're growing it, and also the overuse of the chemicals and the preservatives in our environment. Put all that together, our bodies have to, you know, they're overreacting. And, you know, that is the result of a food allergy. There is a connection, for sure.
And your son, he's got a whole list of things he can't eat, even legumes.
Legumes and peas are a part of the peanut family.
And
5% of the kids with a severe peanut allergy, and he's very severe, have this legume pea allergy. And I was shocked by it because it's funny, I didn't even put the connection. My son actually tried a pea, and I was so excited because he actually really enjoyed the taste. He was like 3 years old.
Yeah.
And immediately started like having his throat close up. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen over a pea.
Right.
But that's
not all beans. That's just the pea. Which ones are those?
Well, peas are the legume vegetable, but they're in that family. But he also is allergic to lentils and chickpeas and anything in the bean family.
Right, but not soy.
Not soy, and that's interesting because that there is a small percentage of kids who can tolerate the soybean and soy products, but not that legume. It's so odd, but he, for some reason, can tolerate the soy.
Right, and then he can have nuts, but he can have some seeds.
He can have seeds, yeah.
Yeah.
He can't have any nuts.
Well, it's fortunate that he can have those things.
Yeah, right.
And also fortunate that he's not allergic to wheat.
Right, exactly. Although we tend to not eat a lot of it, only because I have four boys.
Wow.
My oldest is a girl. And I
four
find
hungry
that,
boys.
Exactly. I find that, you know, there's a lot of just refined and processed sugar in wheat products, mm-hmm. and I just find that it's best to kind of, you know, keep that to a minimum and just make the bulk of what we eat fresh vegetables and fruits and protein. And
right.
that really, that balance is a good thing for them, especially because they're very active kids. They're always outside playing sports. And so, you know, I find when they, my daughter actually used to eat a lot of bread and a lot of crackers and a lot of stuff. And I found that she would get really sluggish. She would have that high and low. She would crash if she ate a lot of those carbs. So we really try to be careful with, you know, how much of that we give to them and just really kind of focus, hey, grab, you know, a carrot stick or grab an apple out of the fridge. And one of the tricks that I do when they get home from school and camp and they're really hungry, instead of reaching for the pantry, I always have like a plate of fresh fruit or vegetables on the table.
Mm.
It's easy, it's fast, it's already done for them, and they can't really say no to it. They're always like, oh, I want, you know, pretzels, or I want something else. I'm like, no, just try that first. Grab a handful of grapes, go out the door, you know, go back out and play. And it works. And that's the difference. It's all about shifting your perspective, I think, you know, and how we're feeding our children. Make it available for them. That's our job as parents, I think, is just, you know, to teach them and make it available for
them.
And,
you know, that's true for all kids. Your kid doesn't have to have a food allergy to be that planned, organized, and on top of everything.
I think that's an excellent point to make, because a lot of times the question I get is, well, that must be so terrible. What do you eat? You know, I really don't look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we can't eat out as much, but I don't even want to. It's one of those things that we really value our time at the table together as a family. We have dinner every single night, all seven of us. You know, whether it's a 10-minute dinner.
That's so important. That's such a good thing. I'm underlining what you just said. Underlining.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And, you know, we talk about the time constraints that parents face. And I absolutely understand that, you know, aspect of it. Two of my kids are in travel sports. We're always shuffling activities. However, I always make that a priority, because it's kind of like we get up in the morning, we make exercise a priority, that cup of coffee a priority. You make that dinner a priority. We can all make adjustments in our day, but you're teaching your children the value of sitting down, enjoying that meal, and talking to one another. And I have found the most important conversations I've had with my kids have been at the dinner table or at the lunch table or breakfast table.
Absolutely. You know, I'm just thinking, this idea is... has been put in my mind a few times about what the most significant thing has been to move our society forward in progress. And a lot of people say it's the internet, but in this article I read, they said it was the laundry machine, and how the laundry machine really got us ahead because we had so much time, especially for women. And when people say that they are juggling so many things and they don't have time, I just think, what if you didn't have a laundry machine? Just put it all in perspective. You've got plenty of time to make the right things a priority.
It's so true. You know, there's a few times where actually my laundry machine has broken.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Dishwasher has broken.
Five kids.
You know? And I do. But you adjust. You shift your perspective. It's important, I think, to not be so rigid. You know, I think, for instance, you know, on a particularly crazy afternoon when I got to get somebody to somewhere and we have maybe a 20-minute window top for dinner,
mm-hmm.
You know, we make lettuce and tomato sandwiches, or
mm-hmm.
we make breakfast for dinner, or we make something that is easy and fast, but you're still valuing that time together. There's times where we just put out, you know, like if the corn is on sale at the farmer's market and it's fabulous, there's your dinner. I mean, really, it doesn't have to be a big production. It's just important to shift our perspective and think, you know, I value this time, you know, together as a family.
Right.
And then you will make time for it.
My version of fast food, run into a supermarket, the produce aisle, grab a banana, an apple, and, you know, a bag of lettuce, and whatever else you like, run out and eat it.
Absolutely. And it's true. You know, we do have a large family, and so even going out to eat, even if we didn't have food allergies, there's no way we would, because it's just so expensive. It's a pain. You know, one of the kids is going to act up. It's almost never worth it. And, you know, we have taken road trips where we pack up the cooler and we bring our picnic sandwiches, and, you know, it is always the better option. And it's just teaching your kids these values of valuing what they put in their mouth, what they put in their bodies, and making time to prepare food for themselves. And, you know, we really do try to, you know, tell our children, you know, try to think about what it is you're choosing even at school as a lunch line.
You know, in ways you're fortunate because I think one day it's going to be called child abuse. There's so many processed foods that parents just pick up and don't think about and feed their children that ultimately, maybe not right away, but in several decades, is going to take its toll. And we're certainly seeing it with obesity. We're seeing it in child obesity, child diabetes now, people dying of heart disease and all kinds of chronic diseases, and most of them are reversible and preventable, and they're caused by the crap that's in our food. And
right.
It must be frightening for you to go to a restaurant, but even if you tell the server what you can and cannot eat, there are so many things they throw in food, you have no idea what's in the food.
That too, and there's just such little knowledge still, especially among restaurant staff and kitchens, about the severity of food allergies. And, you know, for instance, a question we commonly get asked, when I say to somebody we have a dairy allergy, they ask me, well, does that include yogurt and cheese, thinking it's just the cow's milk that you would drink.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, can your child just take a lactate? Is that okay? Or can your child have egg beaters? Is that okay? And so you get these questions, and what it really reminds me is people just don't understand what's in their food, but also more importantly, you know, restaurant staff will think nothing of it, putting an extra tablespoon of butter into a tomato sauce.
Right.
It's seemingly, you know, innocent and supposed to be made with fresh ingredients. There's no way. Or they'll swirl in some Parmesan cheese to give it added flavor. To me, you know, we absolutely can't trust eating out, and there's really just a handful of places we ever, you know, visit. But we, again, don't feel deprived by that. It's one of those things that, you know, you adjust. We've gone on vacation to, Disneyland, to California, to Arizona. We always make sure that we stay in a place that has a kitchen, you know, a condo, which is actually less expensive in the long run anyway. And we prepare all our food. And
yeah.
It's fine, you know.
I love it that way.
Yeah.
I personally do. You know, I don't have any allergies. I think I might have a problem with wheat. I believe it gives me headaches. But I've been a vegan for a long time, and so I've been very conscious of what's in my food, mostly as an ethical choice. And I really enjoy vacations, going to these timeshares and condos where you have the kitchen and you can make your own food. You know, so many people complain about gaining so much weight when they're on vacation, and, you know, it's nice. That doesn't have to happen.
No, it absolutely doesn't. And it's one of those things where you take the focus off the food and you take, the time together. That's really what matters most. It's your memories now. What restaurant are we going to go, and what hot dog are we going to eat? And, you know, that's not what it's about. It's about being together. And, you know, it's funny, one of the things that I have been so passionate about, I'm sure you've read about in my blog, is this whole excess of food in classrooms.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, you know, it's been a touchy thing because, you know, you have a lot of pushback from parents who are adverse to, you know, change in their children's classrooms, and they really feel like it's a part of childhood to bring cupcakes to their child's classroom for every single party, for every single birthday.
Right, and they don't seem to care that the teacher has to deal with all of these kids on sugar highs after the party.
And that's like at the base, that is a part of it, absolutely,
right.
That, you know, you're taking time out of instructional time
to,
you know, clean up, serve, deal with the craziness. Most teachers will tell you they don't even want that. But furthermore, there's a whole liability issue of serving food to children in classrooms today, because obviously there are more food allergies, and it is on the rise, and we don't know what's in our, products that we bring in. And so, and most of the time, it's parents picking up a package of cupcakes from the local grocery store.
That's right.
And that's what it is, you know? And so for me, I've always tried to approach it from, you know, okay, my son does have food allergies, but I don't want to make it just about that. I want to make it as an opportunity to say, well, how else can we celebrate these special occasions that are a part of childhood in a non-food way. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, we celebrate a birthday probably at least once or twice a month in a child's classroom. You know, one of my children's teachers in second grade did this phenomenal thing. She did what was called a sparklegram, and for each child's birthday, she had each classmate of that student write something special about them or what they liked about them. Hmm. She would put it in a packaged box wrapped with birthday paper and give it to them, and that's how they celebrated it. And to me, that was so telling because it really, a birthday is celebrating who we are. You know,
right.
Who we've become, what we appreciate about ourselves, not about that cupcake with, you know, food dye number 8, you know, from Jewel. It's all about, you know, celebrating that person. And to teach these kids, it's not about all that stuff. It's more about celebrating who they are and what their friends think of them. That meant more to my son than any cupcake could
have ever. Absolutely. A treasure to save for a long time.
Absolutely, and he still does have them.
Yeah.
You know, these are sweet messages saying, I think you're a great soccer player, or
right.
You're always really nice and you always share your pencils with me. You know, it's really sweet messages, but the message is there that, you know, let's move away from that, and let's move away from all this excess food in our classrooms.
Well, I don't know if it's an American thing or if it's outside of the United States, but there are so many people that feel that that freedom is very important, and that freedom means we can have whatever we want, whenever we want. We don't want people taking that away from us. And I don't think in many ways people are free. I think people are brainwashed, and they are manipulated by marketing and television, and there are products that they go off like robots to pick up, children and adults, that they're marketed to buy, and it's not an educated free choice, an informed free choice, and yet people will fight for that.
And they will, and that's a good point, because often the pushback that I have gotten over the years is fighting for the right to bring peanut butter and jelly sandwiches into the classroom, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, treat cookies and cakes and all that stuff that is lethal for my son.
Yep.
Really could kill him. And so I always was questioning, you know, the fact that I was debating about my son's life and their right to bring in treats. And
yep.
There was a disconnect there. I always, still the parents, there were not all of them. It's really gotten better over the years where I'm fortunate that my son, surrounded by great friends whose parents, like, go out of their way to make him feel included, always ask. So it was only in the beginning, like, in the first few years of, like, preschool, where it was really hard because there was just no understanding that these foods could kill him, and they didn't really care if that was, you know, going to hurt him. They were going to bring in their treats anyways.
Yep.
I think over the years there have been, you know, so much more awareness, and we're talking about it more, and there's more articles and more studies. I think that there has been an increase in awareness that these are life-threatening issues that these kids have to deal with. And, you know, aside from that, there's the whole, you know, bullying aspect and inclusion and making a child feel, you know, uncomfortable because of the fact that their body is different than theirs. And, you know, that they can't eat the same things that they can. So there's this whole other element, you know, that children, as they get older and go into older grades, that have to deal with. So that's one thing that has been a challenge over the years. But I do think that, you know, my son's friends in particular really value what he has to deal with and are always asking, you know, for ingredients. And I
mm-hmm.
love seeing that in some weird way they're teaching them, you
yes.
know, to look at ingredients and packages and saying, yeah, that, you know, that roll-up, that fruit roll-up probably isn't the best thing. Or, you know, like, let's just grab an apple. And I have found that when he's gone to other friends' houses for play dates, the moms always put out, like, fresh veggies and fruit, and it's so great.
Yeah.
You know,
I was just going to ask about that, because sometimes if a caring friend or parent wants to prepare something for you, it might be touchy sometimes, I imagine, because they don't know everything that you know, so they might want to do something nice, but how do you handle that?
Well, it is touchy. I think, you know, generally speaking, you know, there's always this issue that no product is really safe unless it's come from my home, because we really are so free from all these things in our home that it's truly nut free and truly dairy free. So that is something that I know that I can fall back on. But when he goes to friends' houses, and he's done sleepovers, you know, really have had no issues. He's done tons of birthday parties and sports camps. It's all come down to, you know, eating the least processed food. And generally it comes down to fresh vegetables and fruit and really eating things that, you know, or plain pasta, really things that are very healthy anyways. And parents are always doing their best to accommodate him. And
that's good to hear.
More aware.
Yeah, well, you know, that's we all have our part to play, and I'm glad that you're out there doing what you're doing. Sometimes I think, oh, you know, I don't need to do this anymore because people know what's going on, but so many people still don't. And we just have a few more minutes, and I wanted to talk. Certainly, the fruits and vegetables are really the most important thing that we should all be eating, fresh, whole, organic, locally grown when possible. That's so important. But, you know, we are entitled to a treat. And and the thing is, I think our society has over-treated ourselves to treats so that they're not even treats anymore. And
so,
if we can get back to the simple whole fresh fruits and vegetables for the most part, and then when we want a treat, your vegan bacon classics is a great thing to pick up. There's all kinds of wonderful muffins and cakes and breads and cookies and waffles, and they're simple and easy. The instructions are easy to follow, and a nice thing for people to pick up and make these recipes.
And I appreciate that. And the thing that I love about those recipes is that they are old school. They are, you can't mess them up. You know, a lot of the things that I use for egg replacers are like water or tofu. You know, and
it's
really basic things. You don't have to go far and wide to look for different ingredients. It's pretty much everything you have in your house, you know, would be an ingredient in that book. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so I invite people definitely check out your website, foodallergymama.com. And even if you don't have any allergies and if your kids don't have any allergies, it's certainly worth reading some of your blogs just to get in tune. You know, when we go on a plane and we take our peanuts, you have to think about the other people that are exposed to those things where it could really be life-threatening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, so I wish you well and all of your children and your family, and here's to lots of delicious meals to come.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Kelly.
Take care.
And I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with my next guest, Julianne West. Thanks for listening.
Come to the Progressive Radio Network each day for the brightest progressive minds in the world.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off! I said not to play it!
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny. That's not funny!
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Go. Dr. Nikki. I'm so excited to be on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I'll be able to talk to you live, answer your questions, and work with you for your own patient rights. Tune in every Sunday at 5 p.m. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. See you on Sunday, 5 p.m.
Hi, I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. We're proud to announce that the Progressive Radio Network will be bringing you our live call-in talk show, Prescriptions for Health, every Monday afternoon starting June the 6th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mark your calendars and save up your questions so you can ask us about possible strategies for your health problems, whether mainstream or complementary and alternative.
We also invite your questions and comments about any area of health care, including politics, economics, ethics, philosophy, and styles of healthcare.
So remember to tune in every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Progressive Radio Network's Prescriptions for Health show.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
And you're listening to It's All About Food. And we're back, and we're going to be talking with Juliet West. She's 15. She's a student and an animal rights youth advocate focused on creating awareness around elephant abuse. She began advocating for animals at the age of 9, and at 13, she helped with the campaign to free Billy the elephant from the L.A. Zoo. She's an inspirational speaker for youth organizations, schools, and animal rights groups. Juliet starred in a documentary, How I Became an Elephant, in the 2009 screening at the Artivist Film Festival and the 34th International Wildlife Film Festival. She founded Juliet Speaks at a nonprofit and has since touched over 15,000 with her words and deeds advocating for elephants. And much more on Juliet West at julietspeaks.com and howibecameanelephant.com. Hello, Juliet.
And thanks for having me.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry we had some technical difficulties there, but now it looks like everything's going good.
All right.
And we can have a nice conversation.
Go ahead.
Okay, so you are just one remarkable person.
Thank you.
And very articulate. I've been listening to some of the interviews that you've done, and just amazing. So I guess my first question is, how did your involvement with elephants begin?
Well, it began, like you said, with Billy the Elephant at the LA Zoo. I had been, from the age of 9, I had been raising money for a local pet adoption center from birthday parties, things like that. And then they told me about this elephant at the LA Zoo who was in such bad condition and this whole case to try to get him out. And I became involved, and I was trying to write letters and talk to people, tell all my friends about that, have them write letters. And then I just got interested and started trying to learn as much as I could.
Well, I'm just amazed because you sent me your resume. You're 15. You have a four-page resume. You're featured in this documentary, and it's going to be coming out later on this year into theaters around the country?
We're hoping. We're showing it at small film festivals here and there, and you know, we're just finishing it and moving along.
Right. Very exciting. Well, I'm sure at some point we'll be able to get it on DVD if it doesn't come to a theater near us.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't have to give the whole story away, but what is How I Became an Elephant about?
How I Became an Elephant, kind of the point of it is just to invoke discussion and show solutions for, you know, the problems with elephants. So it shows me as a young girl coming out from the United States to meet Lex Shallard, who is this amazing woman who has devoted her whole life to making a better life for elephants in her country, Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
She has a huge sanctuary, and she takes in elephants from all over Thailand, the most abused ones, and from the trekking camps, you know, the tourist industries, those places, and brings them to her sanctuary where she tries to revive them and give them the life that they deserved all along. So it's me coming out, learning from her. We end up buying an elephant, an abused elephant from a trainer, bringing her back to the sanctuary. It's kind of that messy story as well. And just kind of opening people's eyes to what's really going on behind the scenes at those trekking camps and the tourist industries,
yeah.
And that those elephants are treated with love and care.
I always like to talk about being mindful and paying attention to everything around us, because so many things are not as they seem.
Right.
And I know a number of people who have traveled to Thailand and some other countries where elephants are really exploited. The treatment is just horrendous, and the tourists don't even know what's going on behind the scenes.
Right. I think the way I see it is, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, continue.
Okay. The way I see it is that we can't just point fingers at the Thai people who are doing this and saying
mm-hmm.
what you're doing is wrong, because it's their tradition. So my angle is that I'm going to educate the Westerners coming out from the United States and these places, the tourists that these Thai people are making money off of, and educate them about what they're really supporting, what's really going on, because I think it's everyone's responsibility, if they're going to support something like this, if they're going to spend money on something like this, to know what they're really supporting. And then once they know the truth, once they know all the abuse that goes on, you know, to make their own decision.
Well, I wanted to say a couple of things. One is it's just really phenomenal that you, at your age, have done so much and care so much and are just doing it. And so many people feel overwhelmed with all the things that aren't right in this world, and they don't feel like they have the power or the tools to make a difference. And you're showing us that everyone can make a difference. You just pick one thing. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to change the whole world. Just pick a piece of it and start on your journey, and everyone can make a difference. And that's what's so brilliant about you and what you're doing. And I hope that as you get older, you don't forget this empowerment that you have now.
Right.
Because, you know, as we get older, we get a little jaded.
Yeah. Yes, and that's what I'm always trying to get across when I give talks to schools, to middle school students or high school students, that, you know, don't let people tell you that you're a kid and you can't make a difference. I would. You know, 13 when I got started, and every little bit counts. Not buying that ticket to the circuit, or telling your friends or telling your parents, you know, when you go to Asia, don't ride the elephant. Telling them what's really going on behind the scenes can really make a difference.
Now, where are your parents in all of this? Did you get some of these ideas from them, or were they always supportive? Did they have some issues with what you wanted to do with all of this?
They have been so supportive throughout all of this. I was kind of the first one to educate them about this when I got involved. They were, you know, supportive when I wanted to raise money at my birthday parties. They were like, okay, we'll help you organize it, things like that. But my parents, a couple of years ago, they rode an elephant themselves. And so when I started learning these things, you know, I was like, do you know what you guys did? Come on. But,
yeah.
They have been so supportive throughout all of this. My dad went with me to Thailand to do the documentary, and they're so supportive in everything that I do.
Well, elephants certainly are very beautiful beings, and we often see a lot of spirituality in them. I don't know if it's some sort of anthropomorphic thing where we're reflecting back, but there's something really majestic about them, and it's really hard to believe that there are some that will do the horrible things that they do to elephants. I know when I was a child, I had a fascination with elephants, and I used to collect a lot of elephant figurines. I don't do that anymore. But but you know, it's not just elephants, unfortunately. We, as a society, exploit all animal species, and not just other species, but we also exploit humans. And so does this mission that you have extend beyond elephants?
right now it's just for elephants, but what I hope, I always say from the documentary and from, you know, these talks that I give, I say I want people to not only, you know, understand what's going on behind the scenes at these elephant trekking camps and the elephant shows, but also kind of change the way that they see, you know, all animals that are domesticated, or especially in the entertainment business. I always tell kids that if you see something involving an animal that you don't really think is right, you see, you know, a tiger in a cage at the zoo that maybe seems too small, and or just something that doesn't seem right, I want you to not only to question it, don't just keep walking. You know, if you think something isn't wrong, ask someone, and if you find out that it is wrong, do something about it.
Now, what about your friends and the kids that you talk to? How do they react to what you're telling them?
Sometimes it's kind of overwhelming, I think, to see, oh my gosh, this girl went to Thailand, you know, that's crazy. But I think a lot of times, at least I hope, it really opens up because kids love elephants. Like you said, when you were young, you loved elephants. It's, I don't know, something about elephants really hits kids at home. And at my old school, when I gave a talk, there was this little environmentalist club for the second graders, the third graders, and by the end of the year they said, we want to give all of our profits from all of our fundraisers to you and the elephants.
No.
So I guess
very
that was
nice.
The first thing that made me think that, wow, you know, it really hits them hard.
And what about Ringling Brothers? Have they responded to any of the information that you've been putting out?
I haven't really been in contact with Ringling Brothers directly. I'm kind of intimidated because they're such a big business. But I am going to a protest tonight in Los Angeles. Again, for the Ringling Brothers Circus. And I don't know, I hope that someday they'll hear about me and change their mind.
Yeah, I haven't protested in a long time, but I did some time ago, maybe 10 years ago in New York, and it was a frustrating situation because, you know, there are lots of parents and kids, and they're going to have a good time, and they don't want people to spoil their good time, and it's really hard, even in a protest, to connect the dots for them to really know what's going on behind the scenes. So I wish you well with that.
Right. Well, this is my first time, but yeah, I'm trying to talk. I don't know. My goal is to try to talk to the parents as they're walking in and just, you know, say, you know, one day this is going to be outlawed, and this is kind of my angle, that one day it's probably going to be outlawed, at least from the way things are going right now. Protests are getting bigger and bigger. And have these parents think about one day when this is outlawed, do they want their kids to look back and say, my mom was ignorant just like everybody else and we went to the circus? Or do they want them to say, my mom walked away when no one else did?
Yeah, and there are so many other different circus opportunities that don't exploit animals, and you can have a good time and be entertained.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So true.
Yeah. I mean, Cirque du Soleil is a great example. They're just amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, now, we exploit animals all over the place, unfortunately, and certainly with factory farming. I assume you're aware of how we raise animals for food, especially in this country.
Right, right.
Yeah. Has your work with elephants influenced at all your food choices?
A little bit. I am vegetarian. I don't eat meat, and I mean, it's kind of hard growing and everything. My mom wants me to eat meat, but kind of going back and forth. But
did that happen before or after you got involved with the elephants, being vegetarian?
That's before I was doing the film, so I'd already been involved a little bit, and it was when Tim Gorski asked, the director of How I Became an Elephant, asked me to do the film with him. He was sending me some of his previous work, and one of them, I don't remember the name right now, but it was about the farm animals, and it really hit me hard. It really opened my eyes, made me so upset.
A lot of people aren't aware. There's just so much we're not aware of, so it's so great that you're doing what you're doing, and we all have to be really vigilant and be true. Because this world doesn't have to be this way, and we're depending on people like you to make it better.
Oh. And, well, what you're doing is amazing, too, this whole idea of being real.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking responsibility, thinking about what you're eating.
Well, I really want the message to get to a lot of young people, because I think if we give the message that young people can make a difference and empower them, then they will. And I know that the baby boomer generation is blamed for a lot of things, for destroying the environment and economy issues. But, you know, the older generations also created a lot of great technology, technology we're using right now, the Internet, and it's definitely connected the global community. And that's going to enable people like you to do the next great work.
Right. The Internet, for example, I did so much to educate people through my blog, Juliet Speaks, and, you know, through Facebook and things like that. I reached so many people through the Internet. And, you know, it's kind of what made this all possible.
Right. So what are your plans next?
Well, right now, the whole goal from me getting from the film was not only this great experience, but was to get footage from the film so I can bring it as a presentation to schools, so I can educate the youth. That was kind of my whole goal. So that's what I've been doing. I've done about 3 school presentations so far, and that's what I want to keep doing, educating the youth about this issue.
That's really exciting. Now, do you know what you want to be when you grow up?
Well, I guess when I grow up, I kind of want to keep doing what I'm already doing, advocating for animals, and maybe one day start advocating more for the environment, kind of getting people just to be aware about their surroundings and how what they do affects our Earth.
That's great. Well, we definitely need that kind of help. Did you enjoy being in a film, and do you think there might be a film career for you?
I don't really know about that. It was a great experience being in the film and, you know, getting to go around Thailand. It was more like an adventure for me. And a lot of people have asked that, like, oh, do you want to be an actress now or something like that? I think it was a better experience for me just because of the cause that we were doing it for. But, you know, I'm excited. I'll do another documentary if it's for a cause I care about, yes.
Right. Now, other than Thailand, where else are elephants really being taken advantage of?
Africa, India, all other parts of Asia that, you know, whenever people see these tourist industries where they're riding elephants or doing anything that involves domestication, and, you know, even in the United States with these zoos and circuses and elephant shows, you know, anywhere. I just don't want people to be confused when, you know, the trainers and the people in charge of these places try to say, oh, well, we're saving the elephants. If the elephant is doing some unnatural trick, doing anything, you know, when they're in close contact with humans and things like that, I just want them to understand that an elephant is a wild animal, and they would not do this in the wild. They're not meant to be doing this.
Yeah.
Abuse is what is going on behind the scenes to make it possible for them to do this.
Now, in addition to the touring, elephants have also been killed for their tusks.
Uh-huh.
And is that still going on? I know it's illegal in some places.
I don't study as much with that. That's more of African elephants, but
right.
I do know a little bit. You know, things are still, CITES is trying to, you know, outlaw things like that, but it still comes back and I think it's going to take a while for this really to get figured out, and, you know, it's still kind of an issue.
I was looking at some of your websites, and I think it was you that was hugging an elephant.
I think so, maybe.
Yeah, what was that like?
Hugging an elephant?
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. It's kind of hard to explain. Even when an elephant comes near me, you kind of forget how large and almost majestic this animal really is. And then getting to touch an elephant, you feel their energy. And it's hard to explain, and everyone has to do it for themselves,
right,
have their own experience. But I just really thought it was amazing and empowering.
And this particular elephant was someone you trusted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, elephants are wild animals. You never really know.
Sure.
But, you know, if there are people like Lek around you who have that kind of a connection with elephants, I feel like I'm in a place to trust.
Yeah. Well, I know that because of the way we've treated them, you don't know what's going on in their minds at any time.
Right, exactly. Like the elephants that are at the Elephant Nature Park Wet Sanctuary, those are all elephants rescued from trekking camps around the country, and a lot of them really aren't in their right mind. Rajshree, the elephant that we saved, she was completely mentally unstable just because they're so intelligent and they have so many emotions just as humans that it really affects them when you take them away from their families at too young of an age and you abuse them their whole life.
That's absolutely right. And so I just hope that we all get an opportunity to see How I Became an Elephant. I hope it's a huge success. I hope that millions and millions of people watch it, and all of a sudden the light goes on for them about how to treat elephants and all life on Earth, and that the world's a better place because of it. Okay, well, thank you so much, Juliet West, and I invite the listeners to go to your blog, julietspeaks.com, and the movie, howibecameanelephant.com.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank
All
you.
Right. Thank you so
much. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me. And please go to my website for my new nonprofit, responsibleeatingandliving.com. Thanks so much for joining us.